Oh, the shape up or get. If you've let all the fans down.
Can we not lock this?
It's a fact. I am not playing mind games. I am talking about facts.
I always said if I was Aladicio, they'd probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
The answer questions on anything. Religious, politics, health, you know, sexual problems.
Look at his face! Just look at his face!
None of you, except for those two, have done anything to justify the money that you earn. None of you! Disgrace!
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
All right, welcome along to Team 33. I'm Raf Giallo. You can get in touch with us on Twitter at Team 33. We're also on Facebook and also on iTunes. Bit of a packed show today, lots of different things. Sebastian Coates, I promised last week there would be a Uruguay player, that is him. Also spoke to Jose Jimenez of Atletico Madrid, but it's in Spanish, so unfortunately, or fortunately for you, that's not going out on the radio.
Oh, Raf, you're not going to translate for us?
No.
Oh, imagine if it was all dubbed. You know, he'd speak and then we have Raf's voice coming in overall going, yes, I am having a fantastic time in Ireland.
And we'll also have Keith Andrews on. And at the end of the show, we're going to play a little clip from a podcast interview on a special event that's actually happening in Dublin on June 19th. Juventus Club Dublino, the main Juventus club in Dublin, have organised an event where Toto Schillaci and Patrick Bonner, or Paddy Bonner, will be coming.
Ah, Patrick Bonner.
Patrick.
Patrick's great. He's a great guy.
Yeah, Paddy Bonner, who has been on this show a couple of times. The two of them are coming over to Dublin. It's all in aid of Pieta House as well, but you'll hear about a bit more about that towards the end of the show. But first off...
Sorry, just to interrupt there. Toto Schillaci, a guy who we all despised back in 1990, and he's the most loved... player. We all love him now because it reminds us of the good old days of 1990. Yeah. And he's a man who we all despise back in... It's like he, I don't know, shot the president back in 1990.
I'd say our generation is indifferent to him because we don't remember Italia 90.
I remember Toto Schillaci.
I don't remember Italia 90.
Not a bit. I do. Like, I remember just thinking it's like Henri from, you know, 4 years ago. It's like, this man is evil. He scored a goal against us,
teenagers playing football now
that don't even know who he is.
Well, they don't remember World Cup 2002, never mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who said that recently? Their first World Cup memory was 2002. Was it Dele Alli? I think
it's disappointing, isn't it?
I think his was even further back.
2006 or something. Yeah, I think it was like the Italy win in 2006 was its first World Cup.
That's unimaginable. But look, that is what age is. Because I don't remember Italian 90. I was only
I'm the eldest person here, obviously.
We're here talking. Raf, you better introduce us.
Yeah, sorry, Joe Coffey.
Raf, great to be here.
Derek Ryan.
Hi.
And Killian Woods.
Thanks for having me.
Speaking of Juventus as well... they did a bit of a Mayo, or they are
Juventus
doing Mayo.
Juventus for Sam, that's what I say. Or Juve for Sam.
Yeah, that's another Champions League final defeat. And
that's five since the last one, it now, isn't it? They lost it in 97.
98, 2003, 2015,
and
2017.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Poor old Buffon, eh?
Yeah.
And... you know what? I was saying it, and I feel bad saying this because Real, they're obviously decent side. You know, they're obviously fairly decent in fairness.
No, they're a good team.
But at the same time, they're not.
Are we just buying into this narrative that, in fairness, Eamon Dunphy is a big fan of?
Oh, like.
That they are a good team, but like they're not good enough to be winning the Champions League 2 years
ago. Oh, no. Yeah, that's my point. We're probably marking them up with the Barcelona team of the 08, of 08-09 through to 12-13.
You see, Barcelona changed football. There was like they, although they didn't maybe retain it 2 years in a row, they didn't retain it 2 years in a row because they were trying things. That's not saying Real Madrid aren't good. It's just Real Madrid haven't changed anything.
No.
They are just really good at attacking and scoring. Yeah. And they score lots of goals.
How dare they?
Whereas Barcelona, like, they were revolutionary. They were doing passing. People were like, how do we even beat these? Barcelona were, like, Real Madrid swipe people aside, but Barcelona were wiping teams off the face of the earth.
Barcelona were one of the few teams that have come in the modern era that were doing something completely different in football. Because, you know, you kind of go through a stage of football where you think, we've seen it all before now at this stage. But Barcelona came and did something completely different. Like, if Real Madrid were playing that Barcelona team, it would be pretty tight at the same time.
Yeah. And there's also that first Champions League final where Man United and Barcelona played, and people were predicting, oh, Man United 3-0, this Barcelona won't be able to cope. And then Barcelona just wiped them off.
Actually, do you remember the first 10 minutes of that 09 final where United were coming forward and you're like, oh, right. And then you see Barcelona basically after that 10-minute spell where United could have scored once or twice.
Eto scored and then that was it.
Yeah, completely strangled the game.
And Messi scored an outrageous header.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that said... Real Madrid were very impressive. I thought the main issue for Juventus, in my opinion, was that they basically played a whole game in the first 45 minutes. They looked out on their feet in the second half.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they probably would have needed to have scored a couple of goals. They would have needed to go in probably two goals up at the end of that first half.
And they didn't get any of the luck, really. Was it two deflections?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It was, like they're
at least one deflection and one mini deflection.
They should have gone in front. I mean, it was great that they were level. It was a fantastic, unbelievable goal.
It was so end-to-end. I couldn't believe Real Madrid let them equalise. Like, it was what Real Madrid were doing. Just going back and forth. I thought Real Madrid just shut up shop.
It was
shop.
A great first half.
It was, and yeah. It was great for the neutral.
It's very early to
it was
shut
so
up shop,
strange
though,
of them to let that like equalise, admittedly. A bit of a freak equaliser. Like, he intended it, but still a goal that doesn't always happen.
But... like the Real Madrid first goal took a deflection, the second goal took a deflection. It was
You need a bit of luck if you're going to win the Champions League for the first time in what? When's the last time they won it?
Juventus 96.
Yeah, Juventus 96. Yeah.
So you know what I mean? Like, if you need a bit of luck, and they obviously didn't get any of the luck the other day. But like, Real deserved it at the same time. They were the better team on the night, and they deserve it. That, my point is, we're probably marking them up against the best team of the last 40 years, maybe of all time, in terms of in Barcelona. And it's one thing about Barcelona, it's strange that era that Pep left after 4 years, and they never really maintained it. Like, I remember in 09, 10, 11, I'm a United fan, watching them lose the Champions League final in 11 and 9, you kind of felt like this is a whole new era and Barcelona are going to be unstoppable for the next 20 years or certainly 10 years. And
after Pep left?
While Pep was there. And then suddenly, as soon as Pep left, it was like...
Well, they won it with Luis Enrique a few years after.
Yeah,
but still,
I know, but still,
Yeah, exactly. They were losing like 5-0 in the quarterfinals.
Was it 9-11 and then, what was it, 15 that they won it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so 9-11, you kind of just thought they were going to run riot and just keep winning Champions League.
But the thing about it is, it was the same though with Spain. Spain came along, unbelievable, won everything. Won Euro 2012 in the end at a pretty much a canter, hammered Italy in the final, and people were like, this team is amazing. What can't they do? And then as quickly as they were, well, they were on the scene for 4 years, I suppose.
But your 2008 World Cup 2010.
Your 2008 World Cup 2010 and Euro 2012.
Three
competitions. And then as quickly as they came, they absolutely collapsed in spectacular fashion.
I think,
it was all over.
Wasn't 14 the reason for it, really, because they just didn't. They kind of stayed with the tried and trusted thing of what's done us well in 08, 10 and 12, and they just didn't really mix it up.
And I think, like, same with Barcelona. Like, there was a couple... Barcelona shipped some insane beatings towards the end of that spell of that style of football. They what was it? Did they lose, 7-something to Bayern or something like that on aggregate?
Yeah.
They shipped insane beatings, same as the way Spain shipped heavy beatings and... They're still trying to come back to it. I mean, you need the players, and they just neither team has, like, Spain don't have the players, and Barcelona don't have the players to play that kind of football.
Era's end in football. You're never going to have a 20.
If you get 5 years out of an era, it's pretty
absolutely
good
because teams learn how to play against you again. That's why that's why I love Pep, because he just tries to change things all the time. You know what I mean? Obviously at City, he hasn't done great this year.
First year.
But like, I just love how he's kind of always nearly reinventing things. You know what I mean? He hasn't just played the same way for the last, since 08. He's kind of like changed things around.
I mean, at the same time, you have to admire. I think we're getting to a stage now where we have to really... It's a terrible debate, but damn it, I'm bringing it up anyway. We're getting to the stage now where you have to go, geez, I think Ronaldo might be better than Messi.
No.
Career-wise, I think he's going to eclipse. I think he's going to eclipse Messi certainly on what he's done with his career.
Ronaldo's a machine, for me. That's not. I don't know who's better, to be honest. Yeah. I can't. But Ronaldo's Messi's more.
But then again, isn't it apples and oranges when you compare it like for like? They're two completely different players.
Absolutely.
Oh, they're both unbelievable.
Yeah.
If they were in separate eras, they would definitely be like the undisputed heavyweight champion.
Do you know
that
people love Maradona and people love Pele? I don't really know. Obviously I've never seen him play, or whatever. But like Maradona, people kind of love players like that. And Zidane, the kind of magicians. And that's why I think Messi is one of those magicians that people kind of just love. Ronaldo isn't that sort of same magician. He's not the kind of one who's...
We forget that he disappears in big games.
Ronaldo?
He does. Bale won the last one for them, and I know admittedly he went off injured, but like, he went off injured in that game. There's a lot of players of his ilk. I don't think they go off injured in a Euros final. think like him. I think he was screwed.
I think
he's gone missing in a lot of big games, and it's especially those United finals when they got to the Champions League finals, nowhere to be seen.
Well, he wasn't. He scored in 08 in the game against Chelsea. He scored the only goal for United, and in 09, yeah,
the ones against Barcelona didn't.
Well, he wasn't there in 11, but 09, yeah, he was poor. But like the whole United team were poor that day, and Barcelona were just incredible. 08, like everyone said up till 08, oh yeah, he disappears in big games, then he scored the goal in the 08 Champions League final. And I think that's I don't agree with that.
But like, how many goals did he score in the Champions League? He scored an insane amount of goals this year in the Champions League. I will say that.
I think that's a kind of myth about him, in that like obviously people are going to double mark Ronaldo as well. You know what I mean? So he's kind of marked. I'm not saying he's not a big game player, and that he doesn't turn up on big games solely. You know what I mean? But at the same time,
he won Portugal the semi final against who did they play? Was it Wales in the semi final in Euro 2016?
Yeah, it was Wales. Yeah.
He won that. He scored, was it two goals? Or he scored the first goal anyway. It was an unbelievable header. You know?
Yeah.
I'm just silent. Yeah, you got it.
I just think that it's something everyone throws out at him. I just don't think, I think he's done it in enough big games to say he's not going missing in all big games. Yeah. Okay, maybe you should do it in more big games for the player he is, but at the same time, he does it in enough big games. Like, what did Messi do in, I can't remember, the 2014, was it? Were Argentina in the 2014 World Cup?
Messi's big thing in that World Cup was scoring the last minute winner against
Iran.
Well,
but he had a great group stage and then it tailed off in terms of the goals after.
You could say the same. Okay, Messi's obviously done it in Champions League finals a bit more, but you know, my point is like he hasn't done it for Argentina. The biggest stage of all is the World Cup final, and you know, again, you can't. I don't think he can say he went missing the World Cup final, therefore he's not good enough, or the same at Ronaldo. And also, this whole debate kind of annoys me as well in some ways, because
it's a pointless debate.
But you're putting one down, and you're like, they're both just incredible players.
It's just fun to bring it up because they are completely different players. They are like
one's a machine. That's my point. One's a magician. Doesn't mean either is.
And I think the problem. My thing I'd like with Messi. It's a pity that we don't really know anything about Messi.
Yeah.
Like, we don't actually know anything about Messi. Other than he got in trouble with the tax man.
I wonder if Messi was like Ronaldo. You know, like Ronaldo obviously is big fan of publicity and kind of, you know, publicized himself very well, and it's all about the show.
Or waving his arms every time somebody touches him.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? It's all about the show. It's all like the Ronaldo show and everything's about him.
The celebration even, you know, that whole thing of he turns his back to the crowd. It's
But Ronaldo, my point is Ronaldo makes the most out of what he, like he's an incredible player, but he makes the most out of it as well in terms of the publicity he gets. Messi doesn't. Messi just seems to, you know, just none of the publicity outside, like no one knows about his life. He's getting married soon. If Ronaldo's getting married, it's front page of OK Magazine. I don't know if Messi will be or not. Messi just seems to kind of stay in the background. A small bit more. I'm not saying he stays in the background, but a small bit more than Ronaldo.
That said, Ronaldo's incredibly private as well. I mean,
Well, except when he gets a whole documentary which he spent his whole life.
I don't know. There was that situation at the game where he had his son on the pitch with him at the end, and all the cameramen were around him, and he didn't like that and all that. But it's kind of like, well, maybe you should like.
You brought your son on the pitch.
Probably shouldn't be bringing your kids on the pitch.
I think that's a lot. Have you all seen the Ronaldo documentary? Like, it's all his kids. It's nearly like the you know,
star of the show.
So yeah, it was apart from Ronaldo and George Mendes. Yeah. He's the third lead.
No, it is.
I think this weird. There's 2 points. Like it kind of comes down to what kind of person you are and what person you kind of like and can stomach. I can't stomach, and I think there's a bit of Irishness in it, I can't stomach that overt arrogance.
Then again,
I'm a big fan of Conor McGregor, because it's just something that's just alien to Irish culture, is to have someone who's so out there and thinking on the win. So if Ronaldo was Irish,
Ronaldo consistently delivers. That's what I like about him.
I'm a Man United fan, so I think that's like, I love Ronaldo from that, so I think that's why I love Ronaldo. I would agree. I think I didn't really like the Henri arrogance that he had, and he had nowhere near Ronaldo, but like Henri was quite arrogant when he was at Arsenal,
but
but I didn't really like him.
you're on the pitch and you score against Tottenham, you can afford to,
you can do it, you can celebrate however you want.
But my point is, I didn't really like that arrogance that Henri had back in the day, whereas for some reason I love Ronaldo. I don't know if it's that to do with the fact that I'm a United fan. It's because I'm a United fan, and that's why I love. I never understand people really hating Ronaldo as much, because I grew up to love him, so that's the only reason.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. I just thought the kids on the pitch thing was that crack was a bit like. I mean, if you're bringing your children onto the field, they're going to be photographed.
Yeah.
It's a bit like whole debate is interesting, and the whole thing of, I think that when you're for celebrities, when they're talking about their children, I think you're either all in and you're saying, I don't want my kids photographed, and that's it, and you never put them out there, or you're in. It's one or the other. Yeah, I don't think you can have them.
Absolutely.
I don't think you can have the media selecting. You can't have it out when it suits you. It's the same thing of it goes back to that whole Hollywood thing of, you know, celebrities who use the press when they need them, but then get upset when the paparazzi photograph them. I mean, you're either all in or you're not in at all, I think, with the media.
I agree. Yeah.
And most, I think, like, well, any paparazzi that would have morals surely would.
But there's a correlation between the image rights you have and the amount of paparazzi that follow you. The more paparazzi that follow you, the more likely you are your image rights to be through the roof. So, like, his image rights are through the roof because paparazzi follow. Like, you can't have it both ways.
You can't have it both ways. But phenomenal footballer.
Yeah. We're going to go to a break now, and then afterwards we are going to play the interview with Sebastian Coates. All right, welcome back to Team 33. So on Saturday, I popped down to Maynooth, left Dublin, which I hadn't done for a little while. Must actually pop down to Leitrim someday and say hello to everyone down there.
But say hello now, save you a journey. There you go.
Hello to the people and parish of Mohill.
You're like the Dublin football team, Raph. You start travelling around the country now and you just don't know how to stop.
Yeah. But anyway, I was down there and I was interviewing Jose Jimenez, who is the centre-back for Atletico Madrid and also scored for Uruguay against Ireland. And also, that was a Spanish interview. It's all, like, transcribed and it's translated on the newstalk.com website. Just go to newstalk.com/team33. You'll find that there. There is also, we have podcasted the Spanish version. So if you speak Spanish, you can actually test my level of grammar, which isn't... anyway, moving on. Sebastian Coates was good enough to take time to chat to me. Obviously, he used to play for Liverpool and he's currently at Sporting Lisbon. Didn't have a great game on Sunday against Ireland, which had nothing to do with me, I don't think. But anyway, here's that interview now.
All right, delighted to be joined by Sebastian Coates of the Uruguay national team, also formerly of Liverpool, Sunderland, and now currently playing with Sporting Lisbon. Your career started back in your home country with Nacional, one of the big, big clubs over there. Is there a lot of pressure when you're playing for a club of that size, particularly in a country that small and where, you know, it's really two big clubs? So you're Nacional and then Peñarol.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure, but I think it's a good pressure, you know, because it's a good responsibility to play in a big team in Uruguay. And I won there because I was with 11 years old on the club, so for me it was the same. Obviously, it's not the same to play in the first team, but you know the club, you know the fans, and for me it was really good.
And did you grow up kind of in a Nacional household, in that the family are all Nacional fans, or was that the way?
Yeah. That was the way. So for me, it was really good to play in my team that I support. So, and my family support. So it was really good.
Yeah, Uruguay, the population is very similar to Ireland. We're all kind of around the 3 million, 4 million mark. And the only maybe big difference is your country has two World Cups. Ours have just a little bit fewer. And you've won many Copa Americas. You've won one personally as well. And I asked this to Jose Jimenez already. It's a very complicated question, but what's the secret? Why is Uruguay able to continuously produce so many players but also have such success on the field?
I don't know if we have one secret, you know. Maybe when you're born in Uruguay, they give you a ball. You have maybe 2 years and they give you a ball. And the first sport in Uruguay is the football. So everyone wants to play to play football. We play on the street or we play everywhere. So maybe that's the case. Here you have the rugby, you have other sports.
Yeah, the golf.
Maybe in Uruguay you have football and then basketball, but it's, normally it's just football. And that's why maybe we have a lot of players and top players and they are playing in the best league.
Yeah, and your move to Liverpool came as a very young man. You'd already been in the Nacional first team, and then at the age of 20, this is 2011, Kenny Dalglish's Liverpool come calling. how much would you have known about Liverpool beforehand? I mean, they are a big club globally, but in Uruguay, is it? Do they talk a lot about the Premier League?
Yeah, yeah, we see a lot of Premier League because when I was young, Forlan was there. Mm-hmm. So you know, when we have a player that playing a top club or a top level in Uruguay, you see all the games of, from this player. And Forlan was in Manchester United, and in Uruguay we see a lot of Premier League. And you know, the if you like football, you know, yeah, some big clubs. And for me, when I arrived in Liverpool, I didn't imagine that the club was so important, mm-hmm, not just in England and the world. Yeah. So for me, it was an impact, you know. Mm. I arrived there and I lived there, and I didn't know that Kenny Dalglish was a person who is one of the
greatest,
or not the legend, you know. Yeah. So for me, I learned everything there, mm-hmm, and for me it was amazing.
Yeah, and Luis Suarez had arrived a few months earlier, along with Andy Carroll, and mm-hmm, kind of on the end of the January 2011 transfer window. Now, obviously, he's a friend, teammate at national level. I'm assuming he would have played a big part in you kind of settling into the area.
Yeah, of course. Well, not just Luis. I have a... it was Maxi Rodriguez, mm-hmm, was there, and Luca Leiva was there, so
and
yeah,
still there.
Yeah, still there, yeah, for 10 years. yeah, we have a lot of South American players, so for me it was perfect to settle down, to adapt the, not just the football, the country, we are different, so it was good for me.
And obviously the Scousers are the local population. I'm sure you're well aware of that. Stephen Gerrard and Jamie Carragher, when you joined, would have been the representatives of the kind of the local population. I've always heard good things about Stephen Gerrard when it comes to how he welcomes new players from abroad or from England itself. How did you find him as a captain and also as a teammate?
Well, it was like a dream for me, mm, too, because we saw many games from the Premier League and many games from the Champions League.
Yeah.
And stay with Steven, with Cara, it was amazing. Mm. And when I arrived, it was like I played 10 years with him, yeah, with them. For me, it was perfect.
Yeah.
To be there with them and to learn how they play, to learn how they live, for me it was perfect.
Yeah, and how challenging is it at the time? Because there were a lot of defenders at the club at the time, Agger, Skirtle, obviously Carragher as well. In terms of breaking in, like, you made some appearances in the first kind of couple of seasons, but in terms of the challenge of kind of catching the manager's eye and playing yourself into the team, I know the League Cup was important for you that first season. Was that kind of your route in to try and break into that first team?
Yeah, of course. But when I arrived, I knew it that it will be difficult for me to play. It will be tough. So I think the principal thing of there was to learn, mm, learn quickly, yeah, and try to sell it on the football, on the training, and everything. So, and you have good players to play around you, and I try most of the thing I try to learn, mm-hmm, about them.
Yeah.
Try to learn of the league. It is a difficult league, mm-hmm, to play. So maybe the first year, yeah, it was complicated for that.
Yeah. And is it the physicality and the pace? Because that's the thing, I think people talk about the speed, how quickly the game is played, but also just, you know, you have these kind of tough centre forwards who come in flying at you. Is that the hardest thing to kind of deal with?
Yeah. Because I think it's the only league that does happen.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's difficult to learn that, the pace, the long balls for the defender is not the same that, mm-hmm, if you play in another league. You can climb on the striker, oh, yeah, or, you, yeah, know. So yeah, it's really different to early. So it's you have to learn quickly and try to play in that way.
We had one question from Twitter from a guy at Ferg MMA, so shout out to him. But you scored against QPR, and it was and you're laughing already because you know what's coming. Now his question was, I don't know if you saw Emre Can score a bicycle kick as well very recently. Yeah, his question was your one against QPR better than Emre Can's or vice versa?
No, there was two amazing goals. Yeah. But the best thing of Emre that I think they won the game.
Won that game, yeah.
So we lost. So maybe maybe that's the best thing.
Yeah.
For him.
Yeah. And
but I am a defender, so maybe I have a.
It's not your main job.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you won the League Cup that year anyway, and also it was a year that the FA Cup final kind of came up as well. You, before actually even arriving at Liverpool, you'd already, I suppose, caught the attention of the world because the Copa America 2011, Uruguay wins, and you win Best Young Player of the tournament. And, like, were you ready for the attention at that point?
No, because we never are ready for big success. You enjoy that. That the moment you enjoy everything, but you are not ready, and maybe that's the key of everything. Maybe you have to prepare not just to the success for everything, and but you enjoy, you know, that's the good thing. But if you are if you have a big support around you, it's better than. That if you're alone and you have that success, that.
Yeah. Like the 2013-14 season was a bit difficult because of a knee injury, and but you came back just in time to go to the World Cup in Brazil, which is obviously just around the corner from Uruguay pretty much. And you played England, and obviously players that you'll know will be playing in that team, and of course Suarez scores twice. I remember watching the game and that, but what's the standout memory from that game from your perspective? Because obviously you know these guys that you're playing against.
Well, I didn't mind if some players that I play with them was on the game. I just be focused on our team, on our national. So we know that we have to win the game. We lost the first game against Costa Rica, so we knew that
it was a must win.
We had to, and it was an amazing game for Luis, for everyone. But Luis scored twice, so for us it was a perfect game. And and you know when you are playing there in England, you know it's a special, special.
If you win, we all enjoy being.
Yeah. If you win, it's special, you know. So that was great.
Yeah, and you mentioned Luis Suarez there. Now we watch him frenetically kind of press opposition teams. Is he just as competitive in training? Because obviously he's not here for this friendly against Ireland. But how competitive is he? Kind of just even like. Outside of a match situation, like in training?
No, in everything. It's competitive. But not just him, everyone. Maybe if you are playing just small games on the training, everyone is competitive.
Yeah.
And that's good for the team. Mm-hmm. That's because nobody wants to lose. So for us, it's great to train, to enjoy the training. And Luis, he's mad for those things.
Yeah, and speaking of that World Cup as well, like after you beat England, you went and did the same to Italy, which I remember was Godin's goal as well, and obviously against Buffon, who's playing in a Champions League final this season as well. That next game kind of then took you into the next round against Colombia, and obviously we all remember James Rodriguez's goal and that, and I think it's a special way to win, but... this time round, you know, you're getting ready for 2018. You're in a decent position in qualification. How confident are you you'll get over the line? You've got Argentina next, Paraguay in the next game after that.
Well, we have a strong group. That's it's really important for us. We know that the game that we have against Argentina and then Paraguay, it will be difficult for us. Mm-hmm. But I think we are in a good position now, and we have to make points. We play well. Maybe we didn't get the result that we deserve, but it's football, you know. Yeah. Everything can happen. So we have to be prepared for that game. Mm-hmm. And I think these games are for that, yeah. To prepare to be on the World Cup.
Yeah. Just on club level as well, obviously you're playing Ireland next. You played at Sunderland for a while, and one of our own kind of leaders, John O'Shea. What is he like as a leader, as a teammate, friend?
Well, he's a leader, mm-hmm. natural, you know. I think I spent like 2 years with him, mm-hmm. or 1.5 years, and it was great. I learned everything.
Yeah.
And he's a top man. He's really kind. When I arrived to the club, he showed me the thing on Sunderland. So for me it was great. Yeah. And it will be nice to play against him.
Yeah, and your career has kind of taken you to Sporting Clube de Portugal, or for colloquially known, I suppose, Sporting Lisbon. Many people recognise the name as. Again, it's another adaptation, moving to another country, another language. Sporting are an interesting club, you know, this brilliant academy. Benfica and Porto are a little bit ahead of them for the moment, but I wonder, in development terms, can you see maybe the grains of maybe a potential to close that gap to the top two?
Maybe Benfica now is the world champion, but Sporting and Porto are on the same level. Mm-hmm. So for me to be in a top club in Portugal is really good. You play every week. You play to be champion. So so it's great. It's not. Obviously, it's not the same league than Premier League, but maybe if you are in a top club, it's good. So yeah. For me, it was perfect, my perfect move, to be there, to play Champions League, to play to be champions every week, and now I am showing. And the country is okay. It's good. It's really good. And I and my family are enjoying that.
Yeah, brilliant. And look, best of luck, not against Ireland, but beyond in the qualifiers, and presuming you get to the World Cup there as well, and with the rest of your career as well. Sebastián Coates, thanks a million.
Thank you.
All right, that is Sebastián Coates, former Liverpool defender, Uruguay international, was playing against Ireland on Sunday, and I spoke to him on Saturday. So we're going to go to another break now, and then after that, we are going to play a few different things. Keith Andrews, but also a chat with Pieta House's CEO and the Juventus club Dublino. All right, welcome back to Team 33. So Ireland and Austria is coming up, lads, this Sunday. So if we win that, you know, we're kind of on a decent route as opposed to the World Cup.
I think if we win that game, we're going to qualify for the World Cup, to be honest.
Maybe not automatically, though.
No, but Serbia. I think we will qualify, though.
You see us in Russia?
If we beat Austria?
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely see us in Russia. I think...
We still have to go to a playoff, maybe, if Serbia finish ahead of us.
But we're in the driving seat if we beat Austria. I think that I was looking at it. We're something like... There's some stat like if we beat Austria, we have to pick up something like 6 or 8 points from our remaining games to qualify.
Yeah, the threshold is around 19 points or so. Yeah. If you go above that, then you're in the top
two.
If
we beat generally. Austria at home, I can't see us not qualifying, to be honest. I mean, we'll have beaten Austria home and away. We'll have gotten a draw, ended in a draw with Wales at home. I could see us getting a draw away to them, and then it comes down to the Serbia game.
There's already a 4-point gap between the Austria, Wales section, and then ourselves and Serbia. Yeah. So if both countries win, then
we're playing Serbia at home. I could see us beating Serbia in Dublin.
Oh yeah, big time.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have regarded Serbia as the best team in that group.
I think our start has been actually pretty decent.
Sure, it's the best start we've ever had.
Yeah, but we're, my point is...
Except not performances haven't been great, but we've been picking up points.
Well, the
here.
Austria win was a great win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the one good performance, yeah. Because the Georgia home game was poor.
Oh, yeah, those were
the
okay.
Serbia game away, we were lucky. And then, you know, the Wales game... It wasn't, you know,
it ended with the Coleman thing pretty much.
It was a different game.
It was defined by the Coleman injury.
No, absolutely. I think, but like my point is usually we're kind of running after a second place finish or something, but we're actually in a decent position now where we can finish top. And like, I mean, we're beating Serbia at home. I mean, I don't see that
realistic.
Being.
We got a 2-0 draw away from home. Yeah, or something.
Without playing well, at
we
all.
Weren't great at all. So absolutely. I'm not saying we will, but we definitely can. And getting a draw away to Wales, that I mean,
I'd be pretty bullish about our chances. If we win against Austria, I think we'll definitely qualify. To be honest,
the Wales game away from home could be a massive game. Obviously, you know what I mean.
It will be a massive game. But the thing about Wales is like. Okay, they have Gareth Bale, who's unbelievable, but there are, you know, we can do it against Wales as well, you know?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, so
I think we've had a game now to scope out Gareth. Obviously, we should know how good Gareth Bale is, but had a game to maybe suss out something to nullify him. You can mark him out of a game. He's any other player. He's a good player, but he isn't a player.
Is he going back to United, though? Is he going to United? Never mind going back to United.
Talk of it is.
Oh my God!
I can definitely see Real making a big change this summer, either with one of Ronaldo, or Benzema or Bale.
Nah, it's James is definitely going.
James is already gone, I think. But my point is, I can see one of that front three because I mean, look, they didn't even play one of them in Champions League final.
They dropped Bale.
No, he's back now, but they were playing so
well. An ankle injury, but
they were doing so well with a 4-4-2.
They're playing so well without him.
Yeah.
Is it Isco that's in his place?
Isco's
good.
Yeah. Mm. That's
my point. They're just a better balanced team with him.
That's my point. Yeah. My point is that, you know, do they need that front three? Yeah. Like, you know, if you're not going to play Bale or Ronaldo or Benzema week in, week out, you know, in every single big game, then, you know, may as well sell them.
They're down to the exact same problem they had under the infamous Galacticos era, where you had all these unbelievable players or world-famous players, but actually it didn't work because you can't play a load of world-famous players in a team and expect it to be completely balanced.
Yeah. Shouldn't Zidane say that when Makélélé got sold to Chelsea? Yeah. What's the point in buying another layer for the, what do you say, Ferrari?
Yeah.
When you've sold the engine to, you know what I mean? So he obviously knows himself. And that's, you have Kroos and you have Modric in that midfield, which is fine. That's my point. I just don't, I see Real selling one of them. Quite possibly Ronaldo. I mean, they may look at Ronaldo and go, listen...
I wouldn't be sure about that now.
So many goals this year again.
Yeah, but at the same time, if they are going to sell him at all...
Yeah, well, now's the time.
I don't think they will, don't get me wrong, but it wouldn't shock me.
United are stupid enough to buy him, to be honest. He should be going for Bale.
I wonder how much would you sell Ronaldo for?
What age is he now?
He'd be worth, with his goal-scoring record now, he's probably worth about the same, if not a little bit more than he was.
If they sold him to China, they'd probably get more money.
They get about $1 billion for him in China.
Because the thing about it is, it's even shirt sales alone, like...
Yeah.
Like, now, they could, like, it would be mad, but Chinese clubs would definitely spend over $100 million on it. Well, how old is he? 32, 31?
He's 32, 33.
He's nearly as well groomed and physically, he's a physical specimen like Ibrahimovic.
He's obviously slower than he was. Yeah, oh, absolutely. But he'll change his role, which he has done, and he's become more of a he's turning into a more of a nine. Yeah. You know what I mean? So that's why I can see maybe Benzema leaving, and maybe, you know what I mean. I just don't see a position. Not I don't see a place. There's obviously a place for all three of them in the Real team, but I can definitely see one of them being sold. Real selling either Ronaldo, Bale, or Benzema.
It will be Bale
this summer.
Anyway,
But
anyway, we're going to go to Keith Andrews. So I was speaking to him last week at the Spar Primary School Fives event, and here's that interview now.
You kind of mentioned James McLean earlier as a player who kind of had to work his way up, and maybe that drives him a little bit. You kind of went up from like 2008 being kind of a key part of your career. You know, you get capped by Ireland, you move to Blackburn Rovers. Even adapting kind of even from the kind of wider sense of things off the field even, is it difficult when you're kind of thrust very quickly from one portion of your life to another?
Yeah, I think it is, and I think, you know, you've hinted at the age I was that bit older, you know, so I think that kind of helps things. You look at things a little bit differently, a little bit more mature as you get older, whereas, you know, James, Jeff, they're obviously younger than I was, but James has really matured over the last years. There's no doubt about that. He's took that responsibility of being a key player on very, very well. you can just see the passion oozes from his veins. The fans buy into it, and he's, I think over the last year or so, 18 months, he's firmly become a fan's favourite because he is literally a fan on the pitch, yeah. And fans love seeing that.
Yeah, and I suppose we were kind of chatting there about the outspoken kind of comments, I guess, and in this sense it's a really good thing as well, and maybe that's the sign of maturity, that he's kind of channeling it into kind of driving on teammates.
Yeah, I think, well, we're in an era, and maybe some people might have said about my era and before, that, you know, players tend to be very safe in what they say because they can get into trouble, especially now with social media. James has had that, and I think he's learned from it. Mm. So now I think he has his opinion. Everybody's waiting for it and waiting for him to step over that line. Whereas I think as of late, he's just gone up to that line. And I think, again, that goes back to the maturity. You see at club level, he's not always playing. When he comes on, he impacts game. Again, that's a sense of maturity. I just think he's in a really good place. And for us, just selfishly, I would just hope that next season he can play more regular starting for West Brom or wherever he is, because he's a key player for us.
Yeah, as I kind of mentioned, Blackburn Rovers there, 2008. Like Big Sam comes in, like he's just pretty much retired, although who knows, maybe he will come back. I wouldn't be surprised if he does come back. For you, what did he do for your career? Because he did trust you very quickly, and it was one of those difficult dynamics, like you were brought in by Paul Ince, and I guess it can be difficult when a new manager comes in. You don't know what they kind of maybe naturally think of you. So what did he do for you overall?
I think just the belief and the trust. I don't think there's anything worse as a footballer when you go onto the pitch or you're coming into training ground every day, when you kind of sense this manager isn't particularly liking me, having me. I've had an early part of my career, right at the latter end of my career, I was under contract at Bolton. I knew the manager didn't want me there, but it just was what it was. But Sam's a very good manager, like Martin is, in terms of how he manages the group and the relationship he has with the players. And I think James, again, falls into that category. You know, yes. Martin has the utmost belief. He's the one that gave him his opportunity, Premier League level Sunderland. And I think it can make the difference. You can make players, and I think the clever thing about managers when they do it, even if they don't really believe it, they can still make you believe that they are, that you are the main man. And certainly Sam, I'm not saying he made me feel like that, but he certainly gave me a belief and that I could play and play a big part for his teams.
And Stephen Nzonzi, you played with as well. Like, that's a kind of an example, because he's gone on to Sevilla and he was getting rave reviews in La Liga. Like, would you have kind of noted that potential there, or were you kind of surprised?
No, not from his first training session anyway. You just see this big gangly lad come in from France for a few bob, and we're all thinking he's playing the wrong game here. But quickly, very quickly, I have to say, adapted. The way that Sam played, he was 6'3", 6'4", whatever he was. He was crucial in terms of the way Sam played, in terms of set pieces and screening opposition attackers. And he quickly settled. He was very comfortable on the ball. He was right up Sam's street. And again, goes back to Sam's man management. And he's kicked on. He went to Stoke, probably learned a little bit more about the defensive side of the games and the basics of midfield play. And he's gone from strength to strength. I'd say it's delighted to see, because he's a lovely lad.
Yeah, we were speaking to Darius Vassell a couple of weeks ago about like his first entry kind of into the England team, and just like being kind of starstruck with the Beckhams and everything else. And I guess it's a very different thing when you're kind of moving into the Ireland squad, where you'd have known Robbie Keane from when you moved to Wolves earlier on, and there doesn't seem to be that sense of ego in any era.
No, I don't think so, and I think that's what generally, you know, we always have that togetherness, and it's just there. I don't think we suffer fools gladly. Egos, I don't think, if they do exist, you leave them on the flight over, so to speak. There's been historically big trouble in England camps with egos and north-south divides. We've seen it with the Dutch. And when I came into the squad, I was obviously that little bit older, but I was made to feel very, very welcome. And like I go back to the point earlier, as long as you have the right intentions, as long as you're right there for the right reasons, you'll be open, welcome arms. It's always been the case, and I think it always will be the case.
Yeah, and you kind of mentioned the pressure that's there on David Alba. We don't really have that in the squad, in that I think everyone's kind of regarded as being kind of a similar level and everything else. When we look overall, again, you mentioned Arnautovic, I think, is out this qualifier as well. Is that kind of almost an advantage for us as well, that we kind of have to rely on the team dynamic more so than having to rely on maybe a player to dig us out of trouble?
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I think, you know, when you look back in the last 10, 15 years, maybe people like Robbie, obviously, in terms of that goal, Duffer creating that little bit of magic, I just don't think we have that anymore. in terms of the goals, it was always nice knowing, even if you were 0-0, going into the latter stages of a game, you had someone that he may not have done much in the game, but if one chance comes to him, you know he's going to take it more often than not. I think James McLean has spoke about he's got 3 goals in this group. He needs to get more, he wants to get more. There's been a huge onus on the fact that Robbie isn't there anymore, that they need to share them out. It's as simple as that. And on the flip side, we need to keep more clean sheets because it's even more important than it's ever been. But no, I think that togetherness, that, you know, it's just, that's where we are. There's a different dynamic of this team now and this squad now than maybe there has been over the last 10 to 15 years.
Yeah, I suppose finally, you kind of spoke to Ben a little bit before about kind of the 3-4-3 formation and how that works in terms of wing backs. James McLean might fit in. We never really played it under Trapp because Trapp never really changed the system at all. Is it easier to play it as a midfielder because you do have the kind of the option of somebody in behind?
I think it's just different, and I think it's a system that generally needs a lot of time worked on the training ground. Centre-halves in particular, there's a lot of grey areas when to step in because at times you have to play like a full-back. Some centre-halves aren't comfortable doing that. Mm-hmm. But as a midfielder, it doesn't tend to really alter your positioning. At times you might need to cover 4 full-backs, but look, I think this particular game, it's about fitness levels, that's where it is, and seeing how players maybe, how they react to international football that we haven't seen before. We're going to be up against it. They're going to be a tough side. We are lacking a lot of our key players. So it's a case of who's going to shine, who's going to stake that claim to stay in the squad for this time around and beyond.
All right, that is Keith Andrews speaking to me last week, ahead of Ireland-Austria, but also talking about Blackburn and Stephen Nzonzi and other different things as well. Before we go towards the end of the show, we're going to just play out there's a special event, as I kind of mentioned at the top of the show. It's Juventus Club Dublin, or Dublino, basically bringing over Toto Scarlatti and Paddy Bonner for a gala dinner. It's for charity in aid of Pieta House. And Mario Borza and Riccardo Profiti of the Juventus Club Dublino came into studio on Friday, and they basically, or last Friday, and they basically just explained what the club is all about and what the event will be about. And also the CEO of Pieta House, Brian Higgins, was here. And here's a clip from that podcast available on newstalk.com. Yeah, so the event this year, it's Paddy Bonner and Toto Scarlatti, which is obviously a very big Italian 90 vibe, and we will remember Toto Scarlatti for, not in a good way, certainly. But it's happening at the Radisson Blu Hotel, which is obviously in Dublin City Centre, Dublin 2, June 19th. And can you just tell us what people who go there can expect in terms of that particular night?
Well, obviously it's going to be a great night, and we open the doors at 7 o'clock, and what will happen is a champagne reception, and then at 7:30 you'll enter the hall with there's a 4-course meal going to be served, and during the 4-course meal we're going to have a bit of surprise, but let's say models coming through the tables, and there'll be raffles, there'll be auctions of paintings of the players. There'll be an introductory of Pieta House and the Juventus Club Dublino. And then eventually, as the night goes on, there'll be a band performing live. It's Runaways, they're called, from Drogheda.
Yeah.
Well, part of Dublin and Drogheda. And there'll be, after that, there'll be a DJ. So the whole event will run from 7 till 2 a.m.
Yeah.
So it's a long day as well.
A very long day, but a very packed one as well. Pieta House's involvement, obviously it's for a really good cause, and we know the kind of work that you guys do in the area of suicide and also depression and that kind of area. How did you kind of get involved in this particular event?
We were very fortunate. My connection to Italian football is fairly limited. admittedly, though, the only football I've ever seen live was in Italy.
Yeah.
So that's okay. But no, we were very lucky to be approached by the club, and they told us that they wanted to choose us as the charity for the event, and if we would be happy to do that. And of course, we're absolutely delighted. I mean, for us, it meets a huge number of objectives. It's the struggle for us in suicide prevention is to try and target men, and particularly young men. And this is a fantastic route for us to get that message across. But anything really that puts forward the message of suicide prevention and lets people know that PIDA exists and that our services are here for anyone that needs them is something that we really, really appreciate. And especially when it's wrapped up in a great night.
Yeah. And I suppose, Mario, there you touched on kind of auctions and that. And obviously that's another way, kind of it's raising funds for the work you do as well.
Yeah.
Overall as well, what kind of projects are you kind of working on at the moment, even beyond this event, but just in general?
We have 15 centres now across Ireland. We opened the newest one in Donegal just 2 weeks ago. And essentially we have three sets of services. We have prevention services, and primarily we have a new programme that will roll out in September, and it's the Resilience Academy. And the principle of it is we will work with young people in schools on that principle that life isn't easy. And in life not being easy, it's about talking to young people about the fact that ultimately they will get knocks. And it's about building resilience, acknowledging your weakness, and trying to protect yourself. But at the same time, realizing ultimately that if none of us attack each other, none of us need to defend. So the Resilience Academy is rolling out in September. We have our intervention services, which are what most people would know PIDA for. And that they are the psychotherapy services we have across the country for anyone who is actively suicidal or anyone who engages in self-harm. And then since last July, we've had the bereavement services that we offer and the National Helpline for Suicide.
Yeah, and as I suppose, as you kind of touched on already, football is, and given that it's an issue that it affects, you know, all genders, all ages, but particularly men, it's an area that's worth kind of raising awareness, and football is obviously the perfect way to kind of put a message out there.
It is. We're very proud. We've had some fantastic relationships with the IRFU and the GAA. And if this gives us a way into the soccer community, that's fantastic for us too. Because ultimately, if you look at what a team does, if you look at what the club does, it's a way of bringing people together. It's a way of harnessing energies and interests in specific areas. It's a way of particularly very much men bringing them together. And, you know, we're four men in a room. We are not good at talking. We're all able to talk in this because it's a radio interview. But ultimately, if we're asked to talk about our emotions and how we feel, if we're asked to talk about what really impacts on us, chances are it's a short conversation. Chances are it diverts into, let's go for a pint, or let's go out and get a bite to eat, or I'm busy, I have to go somewhere else. So we need to access men. We need to let men know that, you know, we're as vulnerable as anyone else. And if you think about football, the work that is done on conditioning, the work that's done on making men fit for the position they play in, get teams ready to play other teams, there's a huge science that goes into that. But how much science goes into the mental preparation and the emotional preparation? Because the vulnerabilities there are perhaps the highest vulnerabilities. And, you know, if you look at, there was a great documentary on during the week about the McGuigan stable for boxing. And there was a young guy that lost a fight and he was absolutely desolate for a few weeks. And that's the reality is, you know, he is peak condition as any footballer is. One injury. I'm just looking across the table here and there's quite a few injuries to at least one hand. But those injuries can have a massive impact on a career. They can have a massive impact on the person. And sadly, they can have a massive impact on someone's life.
All right, that is Mario Borza and Ricardo Profiti of the Juventus Club Dublino, and also Brian Higgins, CEO of Pieta House, talking about an event that's going to be happening on June 19th. And that is it for this week's show.
I just want to come in there and say Ronaldo's 32. I was out furiously investigating his age there.
He's October, so he's 33. I think he's October.
No, February. February, according to Wikipedia.
Oh, my apologies. Same as Carlos Tevez.
Carlos Tevez. Rooney is October.
Yes.
Rooney's October.
Carlos Tevez and him have the same birthday.
Because, like, Rooney, like, Rooney's the kind of, Rooney was the same, Rooney's the same age as us as well, like, you see, so.
Yeah, Ronaldo is younger, which is disappointing from my point of view that he's younger than me. 32, is he past? Is that the question?
Definitely not.
But anyway, I think that's it for this week's show. We'll be back next Tuesday. But anyway, Killian
can't
Woods.
Wait, Raf.
Yeah, can't wait either.
Should be a great show.
Actually, what we do
I won't be back next week. I'm away for the evening.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Good for you.
But I'll be back. Thanks to Thomas in advance. There.
Yeah. I'll be back.
It's going to be a great show next week. So
yeah,
tune in.
Yeah. Anyway, next week, myself and Killian were already talking to Michael Cox, who is obviously one of the great tactics writers. He has a new book out called The Mixer. That's the feature piece next week.
I think he said at least both of us in two separate occasions that we had great questions, Raph, which kind of made
look forward to that.
He's buttering you up.
That's
what we need to put in the show anymore. You know, if we have if we release a poster for the show, we should have Team 33 great questions, Michael Cox.
And Dina, it was one of those
from
questions.
One guest, that's all we have.
It was one of those great questions where you're saying to him, you know, I've got a point to make and I'm going to put a question mark at the end of it, but I'm actually a statement.
Yeah. But one guest in how many years is the show running?
3 years.
3 years. One guest says it got good questions. No one else has ever said that.
But it's not good questions, it's great questions.
And there's a difference. Killian Woods, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Raf.
Joe Coffey.
Raf, great to be here.
Derek Ryan.
Cheers, thank you.
And it's a Take It Away, Johan.